All right. Good evening, everyone. So tonight I'm going to be looking at Nisargadatta Maharaj from the final talks. And I'm looking at January 11th, 1981, which is on page 39. Questioner begins. The spiritual experiences which I have, are they something which should not be there? What is it? And Nisargadatta answers, it is all entertainment. You are present here. Is your body? You guys know Nisargadatta is a little bit of a smart ass, right? Okay, listen to this question. Is your body not the result of someone's entertainment? Yeah, he's talking about the world. He says, it's all entertainment. You are present here. Is your body not the result of someone's entertainment? So long as you know that the experiences are only appearances in consciousness, it is all right. And, you know, those last four words, it is all right. Not everybody knows that. Some people believe there's something very, very wrong with manifestation. Some people believe that manifestation is some kind of a divine mistake. You know, and some people even feel guilty for enjoying the world, for enjoying sunrises, for enjoying the beauty. So I think it's really sweet. Then Nisargadatta points out it is all just entertainment, but it's all right. You know, it's okay. It's okay to enjoy the world. It's okay to enjoy the hikes and the beauty and the sunrises and the sunsets and the deer and, you know, all of the things that we enjoy. But he also points out that what we want to do is we want to remember that it's all just appearances. We don't want to confuse the passing, the temporary, with the eternal reality. You know, it's really interesting because, of course, masters from centuries ago had the same teachings, but they didn't have the symbols of television and movies like we do nowadays, right? And now we even have these 3D IMAX movies, and of course, you know, pretty soon there'll probably be virtual reality movies, right? So we understand entertainment. You know, we understand a movie as entertainment, and we understand that you can cry with a movie, you can laugh with a movie, you can get scared with a movie, and yet you aren't affected by it. And that's really what the world is. You know, it's such a wonderful symbol that we have in these modern times that earlier students, you know, centuries ago, did not have. So it's all entertainment. You know, Inner Ramana told me that the purpose of manifestation was joy. Right? The purpose of manifestation is joy. And Inner Ramana also said that what happened, however, is that when we began to mistake manifestation for reality, then that's when fear arose. Because if you mistake manifestation for reality, then you think you're this temporary person. And that's when fear arises. If you understand that you're not the person, that you're the eternal nature that's watching the entertainment, that's a completely different experience of the world. Then the world can be fun. Then the world can be enjoyed. It doesn't have to be taken so seriously. So again, he says, it is all entertainment. You are present here. Is your body not the result of someone's entertainment? So long as you know that the experiences are only appearances in consciousness, it is all right. You know, the fear arises when you think it's reality. As long as you understand it's just appearances in consciousness, then you can relax and enjoy it. He says, understanding is not a matter of time. If you really apperceive the truth, it is simple and quickly grasped. The conscious presence depends on the body, and the body is nothing but the sperm and ovum. So where is this you? This body is like an instrument that says, I am, like an announcer. Presently, you think that you are the body-mind, and whatever concepts you have collected are flowing out. When you begin spirituality, you reject the body-mind with I am not that. Then you come to the I am only without words. Then you are everything. You are not confined to the body. Yeah, he focuses a lot on the body, talking about how we're not the body. And I do understand that we identify with the body. Don't get me wrong. I get that. And I understand that we need to see that we are not the body. But when I went into my own contemplation, what I found was the body actually wasn't my primary identification. The body was secondary. My primary identification was with the mind. You know, it's the mind that says, I am the body. The body doesn't say anything. You know, the body doesn't say, hey, I'm you, you know. The mind is what says, I am the body. So what I found is what I really needed to do. He does say, reject the body mind with I am not that. But even more than the body, what I found that I needed to reject was the mind. You know, it became really, really important to not believe my thoughts, to not believe that they are my thoughts. I remember using an example recently, might even have been Sunday night. You know, when the mind says, you know, I don't like her, right? If we believe that, we actually have an experience of not liking someone. But what about if the mind says, I don't like her, and we choose not to believe that? You know, then maybe we don't have that experience of not liking someone. I mean, that's how identified we are with the mind and what slaves we are to the mind and how the mind controls us. I remember I used to hate things like washing dishes. Oh, God, I got to go wash the dishes. I don't want to wash the dishes. Do you know I love washing dishes now? In fact, people even ask me how come I don't really use the dishwasher, because I get so much joy out of washing the dishes. The only thing that's changed is I let go of the thought, I don't like washing the dishes. So when we're identified with the mind, it colors our entire experience, every element of our experience. And what it does is it blocks out a lot of that joy. You know, it blocks out a lot of that joy. We could be having joy with every person we're with. We could be having joy in every experience that we encounter. And if we're not, it's because we're identified with the mind. So he says, presently you think that you are the body-mind, and whatever concepts you have collected are flowing out. When you begin spirituality, you reject the body-mind with, I am not that. Then you come to the I am only, without words. Then you are everything. You are not confined to the body. One thing that I've been paying attention to lately in my contemplation is the process of programming the brain, is what I call it, but it's the process of conditioning. And one of the things I'm noticing is that if we make a decision that one thing is more important than another thing, or that one thing is good and one thing is bad, whenever we make these types of decisions, which are really called judgments, these get programmed into the brain. And when you have a lot of different judgments and a lot of different a lot of different ways of categorizing experience, what you also get is a sense of a person, right? You know, like, I'm the one who doesn't like people who smoke. You know, I don't like being around cigarette smoke. I just can't stand cigarette smoke. And I'm the one who doesn't like the cold. I don't like the cold. I would never move to Colorado. I don't like the cold. You know, and I'm, you know, we have all of these ideas, but all that really is a programmed brain. Right? That's all that is a programmed brain. So some of the practices that we practice here, like awareness, watching awareness, and the loving all method, if you look very carefully at what these practices actually are, they are the opposite of the judgment that programs the brain. They are practices that allow the deprogramming to happen. You know, when you're practicing awareness, watching awareness, think about what you're doing technically. What you're doing is whenever thoughts come up, you're letting the thoughts go and returning attention to awareness. Another thought arises, you let that thought go and you turn the attention to awareness. It's attention on the thoughts, on the judgment thoughts, that program the brain and create the sense of person. So if you're watching awareness instead of watching the thoughts, you're allowing the programming to be undone, which means the sense of person is also being undone. The same thing happens with the loving all method. With the loving all method, you're loving everything as it is, which means you aren't making these judgments that one thing is more important than another, or one thing is good and one thing is bad. And again, it's those types of judgments that program the brain and create the sense of a person. So if you're practicing the loving all method, you're allowing all of that programming to be undone, which means the sense of person is undone. When the sense of person is undone, the belief in separation is undone. And when the belief in separation is undone, your experience is unity. Right? Unity consciousness. So that's what he's talking about when he says you come to the I am only without words. Then you are everything. You are not confined to the body. The sense of the person has died. Now, the funny thing is there's still a body here, right? The body doesn't actually go away. It's the identification with the body. It's the sense of person that comes from the programmed brain. He says, because of the instrument of the body, that feeling of consciousness is there, and I, the absolute, am not that. So now he's talking about, of course, what I call the second awakening. You know, first you awaken to consciousness, you awaken to the I am presence, and then you awaken to the absolute, which is beyond the I am presence. Not only is it beyond the body, but it's beyond the world entirely, right? It's beyond perception entirely. Having stabilized in the consciousness, the next step, so now he's talking about how to go from, once you deprogram the brain so that the sense of person dies through practices like awareness, watching awareness, focusing on the I am presence, practicing the loving all method, you awaken to consciousness, you're now at unity consciousness, and you know there's another step, awakening beyond consciousness to the absolute. So now he's going to tell us how to take that second step. Having stabilized in the consciousness, the next step is to be in a position to observe the consciousness and all the play that is happening in the consciousness, just to understand. Attachment to the body and to consciousness is very strong. To get rid of it is very difficult. So you awaken from the sense of person, you awaken to consciousness, then what do? You just watch. You watch everything. You continue to let everything be as it is, and you just abide as that conscious presence. You just watch. That's the next step. And if you just keep watching consciousness without becoming involved in it, You know, this is often called equanimity, right? If you just keep watching consciousness without becoming involved in it, then you detach more and more and more from the perception of a world. And this moves you towards the readiness to awaken beyond the world to the absolute. He says the birth principle, the chemical around which the body formation takes place, has no form or design and actually didn't exist. That non-existing thing suddenly came into existence. What is the validity of its existence? It is an apparition only. It can't be the truth. That's why I dare talk like this. This is a big hoax, a big fraud, created out of nothingness. Can you create something out of nothing? There's I think it's in NTI Romans. In NTI Romans, it actually goes through this same logic. It talks about, again, how the world came from nothingness, just like he's talking about now. The world came from nothingness. And then I don't remember it exactly, but it's something like zero times, you know, a million is still zero, right? If you start with nothingness, then what do you have? Even if you have, you know, a million different things, you still have nothingness. And, you know, it's challenging for us to sit here, you know, like I'm sitting here on this lovely love seat in this lovely house, and it's challenging for us to see it all as nothing. But many of us know that if you had a powerful enough microscope and you looked right at this, you know, right at this, what you would see is a lot of space. You know, and some of us in school have had that opportunity to look at that. So we know there's a lot of space here, right? So even intellectually, we know that it's true that if you create something, what appears to be something, out of nothing, then it's still nothing, right? It's still nothing. And so, again, why would you be so attached to the details of the world, you know, what one person says or doesn't say, or what another person does or doesn't do, or what's going on over here or what's going on over there. If you stayed focused on the fact that what's really there, is nothing. You know, what happens, of course, is we get focused on the something, on the appearance. And again, we judge some appearances as more important than others, more relevant than others, some good, some bad. We program all this stuff into our brain just by making those judgments. We create this sense of person, and we're now a person in a world of duality. Some things make us happy, some things don't make us happy. And what he's saying is, this is all a big hoax. Because what it really is, what it really all is nothing. You're judging some appearances of nothing as different than other appearances as nothing, and you're creating suffering for yourself. This is a big hoax, a big fraud created out of nothingness. Can you create something out of nothing? Whatever I said is securely planted in that birth principle of yours, and you cannot extract it. You know, it is interesting to contemplate, isn't it, how a sperm and an egg come together? Just think about it. A sperm and an egg come together, and somehow you, a person, comes from that. You know, I mean, how often do you really sit around and contemplate all that happened other than two people getting together and being entertained, as he said at the beginning of this? All that really happened is a sperm and an egg came together. Where did you come from? You know, where did you really, really come from? That's an interesting question to contemplate, and it's something that most people never contemplate. Whatever I have said is securely planted in that birth principle of yours. You cannot extract it. In due course, it will proliferate into knowledge. Just keep contemplating that. Where did you come from? What are you? He says, I don't want life, even for a moment. But in that momentary life, there are so many lives. What this reminds me of is something that Thich Nhat Hanh once said. Thich Nhat Hanh said that people experience anguish over whether they live or whether they die. And he says, but the leaf on the tree doesn't experience that anguish. Just for a time, the leaf is on the tree, green, blowing in the wind. And then one day, the leaf begins to turn yellow and then brown. And then it, you know, falls. But it never experiences anguish. What experiences anguish about what we call life and what we call death? And again, that's the programmed mind. It's not the truth of what we are, because if you get right down to it, the truth of what we are is life, and that leaf is also life. And if the leaf doesn't have to experience anguish, we don't have to experience anguish. We just be in the present and allow the present experience to be whatever the present experience is. And then we only experience joy. And every one of us knows, we don't think about it, but every one of us knows, just like the leaf is eventually going to fall from the tree, these bodies are going to pass away. A friend of ours, by the way, is passing away right now. Her name is Lynn. I talked to her on the phone today. She sounds very, very weak. She is in the hospice facility. She talked about what a lovely place the hospice facility is. Apparently, it's on a beach. She says, I can't see it. She can't see out the window, but she knows it's there. And she's not in anguish. She's being with the experience. She knows she's passing. When we hung up the phone, she said to me, she said, I'll see you on the other side. And how do you want to die? I've also heard stories of people who were just fearful, you know, like they were trying to fight this dying thing. It's something you can't fight. Just like the leaf can't fight the falling from the tree. Where did you come from? And what if you're just going to go back there? And there's nothing you can do to stop it. How do you want to experience it? And how do you want to experience this life, this temporary life, while you're here? You know, I told the story last night about the friend of mine who was always worried about her finances, very much so, not just a little. Always worried about her finances because she wanted to have enough money to retire. And then she was riding her bike and she was hit by a truck and she was killed. She was, I think, 65 at the time. But she hadn't yet retired. And my friend, she experienced extreme fear about her money. I mean, I talked to her on the phone about it many times, extreme fear about her money. So she spent her whole life being afraid that she wouldn't have enough money to retire, and then she never retired. You know, there's a message in that for all of us. You know, Muji and Michael Singer both say, you should live every day of your life as if this is your last one. If you knew that you would not wake up tomorrow morning, how would you spend today? You know, Michael Singer says, every person that you meet You should greet that person and speak to that person and listen to that person as if that is the last face you will ever see. It doesn't even matter if you know the person. This could be the person at the checkout counter at the grocery store. If you knew for a fact that when you turned and walked away from that person, you were going to get struck by lightning and that would be the end of your life, maybe you would look at that checkout person a little differently. Right? That's what Muji and Michael Singer teach, to live each moment as if it is your very last moment, with that kind of preciousness behind it. Not fear, preciousness. Like Lynn, laying there in hospice, can't even see out the window, but she knows the beach is there, and she tells me it's lovely. Oh, I can't see it, she says, it's lovely. It's such a lovely place. Oh, I can't see it, she says. That's amazing. She's appreciating it just because she knows it's there. You know, and she knows these are her last moments of life. I'm not afraid of death. And remember when he had cancer when this book came about, throat cancer. I'm not afraid of death. With death, the imperfection is removed. Consciousness, the stigma of imperfection is gone. What remains is total perfection. Where did you come from? That's the total perfection. And he's saying you'll go back to there. And then what are you really? If you come from, and there's no word to put in there, you come from, and you're going to go back to, are you that or are you this? Are you that which you came from and are going to return to? Or are you the temporary manifestation that's always changing, that's in the middle? And what if that which you came from wasn't, it's not like that's a part of your past, and then when you return to it, it's a part of your future. But what if it's here right now too? And what if you can go within and you can find that source, that which you are, right here, and come to know yourself as that instead of as this? He says, there is no guarantee I will meet you tomorrow, because again, he has throat cancer. He might not wake up in the morning. He's dying when he's giving these talks. There is no guarantee that I will meet you tomorrow, but the reality is that there is no separation at all between you and me, because we are one. Do not imagine any separation. And that's the end of the message. So where did you come from? Contemplate that and then look for that here now. And that's the end of the night. So thanks you guys for hanging out with me again.